Previously on the Sound of Football podcast.
Of course, in England, the England captain's role does come with additional, you know, incentives. I mean, there's obviously the extra PR work, but there's also the money. You know, you can make money from endorsements and that by being the England captain.
Yeah, you could probably sell some hospitality tickets to me.
For a reasonable consideration, I'm sure you could. Who would blame an England captain for providing such a valuable service?
I don't wish to be personal, Graham, but that's probably why you've never been given the England captaincy, even if you've got ideas like that rattling around your head.
Yes, it's the Sound of Football podcast with Terry DeFellin, Graham Sibley, and your host, Chris Oakley.
Welcome everyone, glad you could join us for episode 73 of The Sound of Football. On today's show, we turn our attention towards the club v country battle, which looks set to grow over the coming weeks with regards to Arsenal and England midfielder Jack Wilshere. Wilshere's already announced his intention to represent England in the upcoming UEFA Under-21 tournament in Denmark this summer, but he's... rather admirable sense of ambition may not go down so well with everyone, not least his club manager Arsene Wenger. So, on today's show, we're going to discuss the whys and wherefores of whether young players should take part in under-21 tournaments and perhaps work out who the winners and losers are set to be in all of that. So, let's start off with a question. I'll throw this open to either of you. Jump in at will, whoever wants to take this one. Given the fact that certainly Germany, more than anybody else, and certainly one or two other countries to a lesser extent, like Spain and Holland, like to sort of bed their young players into an under-21 side prior to, say, a World Cup, and get the benefits of that further down the line, how sort of desperate, if that's the right word I'm looking for, how desperate are England to bed in young players like this? Because, you know, as things are sound at the moment, England are like ranked 6 in the world, they're top of their qualifying group for the Euros, and, you know, everything's going okay. So is there a dire need to be bedding in players when maybe we might be at risk of overexposing them and getting them to play, if you excuse the vernacular?
How on earth are we 6 in the world?
That's another podcast.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, anyone who's watched England recently that would know that you know, they're one of the most uninspiring teams around.
Is that England seniors that are 6
yes.
in the world?
Sorry, yes. Should have made that distinction.
Six in the whole.
I think it was 6 the last time I saw it. Yes, I'm pretty sure of that. Maybe we'll confirm that.
Not 6 on Mars or something like that.
This planet on which we reside.
6 in the British Isles or something like that.
6 amongst countries named
all
England.
All comes above us or something like that. I don't know. I mean...
Suspend your belief.
Well, I think... You know, if we don't play the youngsters in the under-21s, who is going to play there?
Well, we could just dig out. James Milner. We could just get him back in.
Get him up there. He's played 70-odd games for
them. He was playing until he was, what, 35, wasn't he?
He was something like that, yes.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I like the fact that the England under-21 team is there, and the thing is, I find quite confusing about it is that the fact is that anyone who is good enough nowadays is playing for England before they're 20, it seems.
Yep.
And when it comes to world-class talent, it's emerging quicker and quicker. You look at Wayne Rooney, and you look at now at Jack Wilshere as well. Mm-hmm. And there are other examples as well, Michael Owen going back. And you sort of think, well, these were players that... I know Owen and Rooney, I don't think they ever played for the under-21s, did they?
I think they
came straight into the senior squad.
I mean, I defer to your knowledge there.
Yeah, I could be talking out of my head, but I think you're right. And people have gone on and written blogs about it. So
that's also weird. That's another topic for another day.
Yes.
I think the thing to remember though is although our youngsters do go into the first team quite early. England still haven't won anything since 1966.
Yes.
Which does suggest that perhaps there is an opportunity to perhaps have a look at things.
We have won a couple of under-21 tournaments.
We certainly have.
We have, indeed.
1982,
1984. Yep, yeah. Indeed. According to you, without our best players as well. And yet, at senior level, we don't win anything at all, unless you count the tournoi. which most people don't. Even then, that was in 1997, which is quite some time ago. So, you know, it's been... I think that there's something to be said also for young players gelling together as a single unit, as a team, and then being brought through as much as possible as a single unit. Although, obviously, you know, over the years, those players will fall down, fall by the wayside. Mm-hmm. I think there's also tremendous merit, and I can't understate this enough. There's tremendous merit in having players form a group and then go
onwards as a group. Yeah.
Go on tour and get used to living at close quarters for 3 weeks, a month. Last year we had an excellent opportunity to send our the cream of our under-17s to South America to play in the World Under-17 World Cup. It was early season, and a number of players didn't go.
Yes.
I thought this was scandalous when you consider that, if all being well, a good number of those players will be back in South America in 2014.
Mm.
And the fact that they weren't there to go to play in a tournament and get used to themselves and get used to being in another country, or it was in Colombia, so it's not Brazil, and I realise I'm not trying to lump in South America as one amorphous mass. Nevertheless, all right, maybe I am. Maybe, but I've said it now, and I'm not going to go back and edit this. So, but it is an opportunity for the youngsters to get to know each other and live somewhere else, completely different to where they are, if albeit for a month or so. And I think that the England players, this current crop of England players, are lousy travellers, which is one of the reasons why I think they're so lousy. One of the many reasons why I think England don't do well in tournaments. I think there are other reasons as well, but one of which is they're lousy travellers.
Yep.
They're always miserable. They cosset themselves away in like fortresses. They end up just pissing themselves off, and the staff, no doubt, as well, having a really miserable time. And no wonder they don't play too well. So I think that that is important for any development team to come through, and I'm pretty certain that if you look at the Spanish team, the Dutch team, and certainly the German team, then that much of their goodness is because of their togetherness. That, and they've got some cracking players as well.
That always helps.
It does help.
Technically very skilled and so on, yes. Yes, indeed.
Indeed.
Excuse me.
Or cracking.
Cracking, yes.
Cracking. Yeah, sorry,
carry on. I will carry on. I mean, if you look at the... Because England played Germany in the last Euro Under-21... tournament 2 years ago. If you look at the two teams in the final, I mean, in terms of players that have gone on to actually appear in the full squad, in the full team from those countries, from England, five players went on to appear in the full team. So you've got Michael Richards, Kieran Gibbs, James Milner, of course, Adam Johnston, and Theo Walcott. For Germany, there were seven, and that's not including Sebastian Burnisch, who went on to play for Poland, strangely. So they seem to have kind of, you know, made more of a virtue, should we say, of their young players. And, of course, that really kind of came through in the World Cup last year. But I take your point completely, Terry. I mean, yes, given the fact that they all sort of, you know, the England players, to some extent in the last World Cup, were sort of saying, oh, we're bored and, you know, we're not kind of, you know, we're holed up in this hotel. It's interesting, actually, Fabio Capello, I was reading today, has said that if England get to the Euros next year, that he's not going to send them off to a training camp, he's just going to send them on holiday, which is an interesting tactic. I'm not quite sure what you think about that.
I think that's probably a very good idea. I mean, what they should do if they do go to Poland and Ukraine is that they should just move into a city centre hotel and then pay to redevelop one of the local football clubs to give them proper training facilities stay there and, you know, sample a bit of the local colour. And if that means a few late nights and a few tabloid headlines, then, well, you know, we'll all know who the culprits are and, you know, we'll all know who to blame.
Yeah, I mean, like the dentist chair was a very famous tabloid expose before Euro 96. Yeah, didn't seem to do any problems
for
them.
That was the competition we nearly won then. Yeah,
I was just to say, exactly. And Italia 90 as well, to some extent as well. I think there was sort of, you know, Gazza up to no good and heaven knows what else. I mean, but of course, the thing is, coming back to the sort of original point, is of course Arsene Wenger may not be very happy because essentially, if Jack Wilshere plays in this under-21 tournament this summer in Denmark, he'll be basically rounding off a season in which he will have played 53 games if he plays for Arsenal for every game for the rest of this season. And so he's going to come back with, you know, rather a burnt-out young player. And as has been sort of proven in the past, we had Walcott going off to the under-21s in 2009, and he got injured pre-season. So he's bound to have that in his mind, Wenger, that the same thing could happen all over again. So, you know, to what extent can Wenger sort of say, well, actually, I'd rather he didn't go? I suppose it's, to some extent he's got to abide by the player's personal wishes. I don't know.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think it will do the player's development better for him to go to this tournament than for him to not go to this tournament. Mm. And I think Wenger has been wise enough in the past with young players to agree to that, to that basis in the past. I think he certainly hasn't stood in the way, of Walcott. He certainly complains when they come back injured, but I don't think he's ever really complained too vehemently that the players are playing too much. Mm. I'm not so sure. I think if he thought that he was playing him too much, he wouldn't be playing him every week for Arsenal.
Mm. We've just dragged up Neymar's statistics from 2010, a player who suddenly exploded on the mainstream media yesterday because they were on ITV, and rightly so, a player that many of our listeners know about. In 2010, how old was he, 12, 13?
He would have been 18 last year.
In 2010, he made 60 first-team appearances.
And wow. Scored 42 goals in the
match. Good grief. He's the South American Championship, so we don't need to worry too much about the goals because it's a different environment.
No, but look at that.
I mean, 60 appearances. Look,
he played every game of the Paulista.
Right.
And played 8 games in the Copa de Brazil. He played 31 games in the
And if I'm not reading that right, he's squeezing a couple of Copa Libertadores sort of appearances in there as well. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, yeah. I mean, few people are arguing that Neymar is going to be a world star for the next decade.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that sort of renders any sort of like suggestions that Wilshere is at 19 is somehow, you know, doesn't have the legs to go and play a summer tournament.
Mm. Yeah.
Is maybe stretching things to an extent.
Well, I
would certainly disagree with that point of view.
Yeah, I think I'd reiterate. I think it's more important for his development to go to an under-21 tournament than for him to sit at home watching it on the telly, especially with the Olympics coming up next year.
Quite.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, with regards to appearances and so on and so forth, Gareth Barry, who of course will be England captain in the friendly against Ghana this week, has come out and sort of said, you know, it's not as if Wiltshire's been playing, you know, for the last 5 years, week in, week out. If you look at the appearances that Wiltshire's made for Arsenal, I mean, in 2 years ago, he made 3 appearances, plus 5 as sub. Then he made 4 appearances, 3 as sub. And then this year, he's played 36 with 4 as sub. So he's suddenly really kind of hit the spotlight this year, but only this season. So that would suggest he's still, you know, relatively fresh. He's only 19 years old. So, you know, and as you say, he could come back from the tournament a better player for having had the experience.
Certainly.
Well, I don't see how it can't make him a better player.
Hmm.
And I also don't see how it can't make him a better international player. And obviously, the context of this podcast is to talk about, you know, we're talking about England again. Sorry, Scottish business. But we are talking about, you know, what we would like, you know, a successful English national team. And Jack Wilshere is certainly going to be part of that. And so he, from our point of view, from an English supporter's point of view, he needs to be a bedded in, you know, proper international player. He needs to be like Bastian Schweinsteiger is, you know. Not, I mean, he needs to be, a one hand, he needs to be Arsenal, and on another, he needs to be England. And both are the same, and with the same levels of intensity, and plays for both with as much, you know, commitment as the other.
Players that we haven't really seen since Owen and Beckham.
No, quite so. Mm. And I think, you know, we'll look back with and lament Owen's career, because I mean he was a fine player for England, a real a really good England player. And I know it's fashionable to have a go at him these days. But I mean, man alive, if the injury hadn't have dogged his career, he'd scored a lot more goals for England. And I'll wager England would have gone a little bit further as well.
Yeah.
Even though they are largely not that good.
Yeah.
A player like that. It's very special.
Yeah,
so
I think that
Wilshere is another one of those. He's another one of those and he's got that potential. So there's all kinds of things that can go wrong with Wilshere's career. He could get a horrible injury. He could fall into with the wrong crowd. Anything could happen.
Mm.
But what you should try and do is you should always try and see if he can do, you know, the right things. And I think that being an enthusiastic England player at every level of age group is a good thing. And I think it's, I don't think it would be right for him to skip the under-21 level. And I would suggest that precedent suggests that it doesn't help an England international if they go straight in.
Yeah. I think, obviously, this is going to be a matter that's got to be discussed between Stuart Pearce, the under-21 coach, and Wenger. Of course, one thing that Wenger can't really sort of say, much like any other Premier League manager, is that, we want to keep our players sort of fresh during the summer and give them a bit of a rest because, of course, as we all know, certainly the big clubs in the Premier League like to send their players off on a tour of the Far East and places like that, so it doesn't necessarily add up.
Well, yeah, although, I mean, in fairness to that, those are usually for their pre-season friendlies, they're usually for conditioning. They're exhibition matches, and they're not going to be played with any kind of intensity that you would expect at a competitive fixture like an under-21 game. So I take your point, Chris, obviously, but at the same time, you know, these are not quite the same sort of like situations that they're in. And I always find that's a little bit of a hollow argument when people say, well, you know, you take them all the way over the world. I say, well, you know. You know, it's good to travel and it's good to see new places. And, yeah, and they're not going to be working terribly hard when they're out
it's
there.
It's not as if they're roughing it when they're travelling.
No, exactly. You know, so, you know, they'll be full of massages and, you know, physio and you know, control training.
These guys do not fly economy.
Yeah, and obviously the medical and physio staff know the players extremely well and know how to deal with them. So, you know, I wouldn't necessarily use that as an argument. Against allowing a player to go on international duty. Mm. But I take your point, Chris.
Mm. I bet the West Ham players fly economy. it's just an image I have in my mind.
Having seen David Gold's helicopter yesterday, I can say that
is that a euphemism?
There is not enough room in there for anywhere anymore.
What on earth were you doing looking at David Gold's
chopper?
I was wandering around his garden yesterday.
What on earth were you doing wandering around his bush?
Long story. I'll bore you with it later.
Okay. All right.
It's David Gold euphemism bingo, everyone. There we go.
It should be said that Graham lives not too far away from Gold Towers. So
the dildo factory.
The factory lives within a thrice of the dildo factory. So if you're looking for any dildos, then Sibley's your man. drop him a line on Twitter.
Just drop us a line on Twitter. We'll take your details. It'll be fine. How long was it before the security cameras picked you up, by the way? Oh, no.
Like any true Bond villain, he was expecting that.
dear. I think we'll just rein this all back in then. We were talking about sort of injuries. I mean, I don't know if either of you have any kind of insight. We're talking about the...
Dude, you don't really think we have any insight? Well, yes. Thanks a lot.
Right.
Let me finish.
I mean, like, these people have been listening for 73 episodes and they still haven't worked that out.
Only about four or five of them have been listening for 73 episodes. And I've been listening for 73 episodes and I produced the bloody thing. Sorry, carry on.
Sorry, let me rephrase that then to avoid any embarrassment on all our parts. With regards to the German players that have sort of come through from the under-21 team into the full team, you've got, I mean, some great players there that we saw, particularly in the World Cup last year. You know, Sami Khedira, Jerome Boateng, Mesut Ozil, you know, I could go on, Manuel Neuer in goal. I mean, do we know if any of those have sort of ended up kind of with fitness problems as a result of, you know, over being overplayed? I'm not aware of any of those stories. So presumably they're being kind of managed, shall we say, in a way that's beneficial for everyone.
I'm not aware of any significant injury concerns affecting any of that sort of like crop of youngsters.
What's also got to be remembered is they don't play in the Premier League, which we're always told is the hardest, toughest league to play in.
Well, they don't play in England, so they only have the one. Most of them will have had the one league competition, obviously, which is every Saturday. So it's perfectly regimented.
Yep.
There's no midweek shenanigans going on. There's no League Cup.
German League is four games shorter as well.
The German League is four games shorter. The German Cup is a shorter format competition as well, although that doesn't affect, in fairness, that doesn't really affect the bigger
They'll
clubs.
Be playing the same European competitions, not getting as far, but they will.
Yeah, usually not getting as far. So there may be an element of that involved.
But apart from that,
it's difficult to think of. I mean, I don't follow the Spanish League that well, but as far as I'm aware, whatever issues may be affecting Mesut Ozil and Sami Khedira at Real Madrid, and I'm not aware of any serious issues with them, I certainly don't think they've got anything to do with fitness. Apart from, I think there's been some suggestions that maybe Ozil doesn't usually finish most of his games for Real Madrid. So maybe that. So in terms of perhaps stamina and endurance, it's still.
And I know that was a bit of a hoary chestnut with the Bundesliga a few seasons ago. Do you think that's still the case, that fitness levels there aren't as good as...
Okay, well, I mean, in fairness, I wouldn't know that because I don't work in the Bundesliga to know that and be able to make it around. I'm not a physio, but it was something that Jürgen Klinsmann spoke about a few years ago.
Yeah.
And he pointed to a number of late goals that were conceded in Bundesliga games that he put down to a lack of fitness from defences. That's an interesting angle, but I wouldn't like to say whether or not.
But
that was
also, it's just one manager's opinion.
Yeah,
indeed.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm. So essentially, this kind of leads us on to a bit of a discussion with regards to the Olympic squad, because of course the under 21 tournament in Europe, at least, acts as a kind of qualifying tournament for the Olympic tournament, which will be, of course, next year in just under 500 days, I suppose it must be. So we've got this situation now, of course, where England look like they're going to be providing all the players for a Great Britain team, Scotland, Wales, Northern Ireland are having nothing to do with any of this. There's been all the kind of ramifications, all the discussions going on, various ideas of how to combine the players. And, of course, Scotland, particularly vociferous in their sort of opposition to the plan. What's our sort of thoughts on that? Because, of course, the reasoning why the likes of Wales and Scotland and Northern Ireland don't want anything to do with it is because of that fear of relinquishing some of their rights that they have. All four of the home nations have a place on the IFA board, which, of course, makes the rules of the game and so on, and all four countries can take part individually in the World Cup and so on. And, of course, there were fears that if all four teams join into a Great Britain team, then FIFA will say, oh, if that's the way you want to play the game, then that's how you've got to be. You've got to be a Great Britain team. But of course, FIFA have now sort of said, as far as I can make out, no, you're fine. You've got our assurances and so on. How much of a shame is it, do you think, that we won't be seeing a true Great Britain team in the real sense of the word at the Olympics next season?
Personally, I don't think it is a great shame. It's a great shame for any emerging talent from the other teams. Mm-hmm. And if I was a 19, 20-year-old player in Scotland who maybe as yet uncapped, and I had an English grandmother, and I had a chance of getting a gold medal.
Becoming an Olympian.
Yeah. Oh, it's tremendous, yeah. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, I think it's a bit blinkered by the SFA, but you know they've obviously got their reasons and they've obviously got their little fiefdom to protect as well.
Mm.
I'd hope that A isn't all it is, because then it would really be quite small-minded.
Mm.
I hope that there are other elements to this that we are not seeing, because it does seem short-sighted. One, precisely for the reason that you raise. A young Scottish player, a young Welsh player, a young player from Northern Ireland, deciding, if they're eligible to be English, and then trying to see whether or not they can get a place in that squad, or declaring for England.
Yeah,
sure is a last thing that any of those nations would really want.
Exactly. But also, as well, I look at players like Aaron Ramsey, who would,
Gareth
I would
fail.
Think, Gareth Bale would get into a Great Britain team and would be better than an English alternative.
Yeah. No question. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Wales have got two cracking players eligible to play.
Yeah.
In the Olympic squad. I think it's a tragedy that they won't be able to play. Mm. Now, there are obviously, there's strong feelings about this.
Mm.
So, and obviously, it's also fair to say that we're sitting here, three English guys, who yeah. are being fairly ambivalent about the whole thing and saying, well, you know, yeah. isn't it a shame?
Yes.
Which is a classically English sort of like point of view to take, basically, when it comes to the union in general. And I'm sure that there are many, many Scottish listeners and Welsh listeners and maybe even the odd listener from Northern Ireland. In fact, I'm pretty certain I know of one. Who feel completely different about this and mm. will be concerned about losing their national identity and becoming effectively the union, becoming a single team, and are concerned that this is the thin end of the wedge. And as much as you, obviously I know what you've said, Chris, about FIFA have said, look, no, it's everything's cool, don't worry mm. about it. But I don't think it works quite like that. We're always quick to disbelieve FIFA on a number of different things. So why Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland should believe them on this is less mm. certain. But also that isn't the way that FIFA works. The other confederations and the other nations anxious for additional World Cup qualifying places will say, look, I don't care what you think, FIFA. We think that it's unfair that these guys have got four nations and they're actually one. So we think that it's that, and so the fact that they've unified for this one tournament means that they should unify going forward. And mm. you can perhaps see where their concern lies. But if that is what it is, I think it probably underlines just how tenuous the situation here is.
Mm.
And I think that perhaps there might be a time when people from outside of England, within the rest of the union, might have to think to Northern Ireland and think to themselves, well, this is pretty tenuous, and do we have to face the reality that maybe one day there is going to be a British national team.
Yeah.
My personal view is I think it's inevitable. But I couldn't give you a timeline or a timescale as to when it's going to happen. But I think it's inevitable.
Yeah, I think if there is going to be a British national team, it's going to be led by clubs. I think that's... If it comes from the demise of the SPL, that yeah. I can see is probably going to be the most
could be a trigger
route.
Yeah. I think that, I mean, for one reason or another, all the nations have got issues domestically.
Yeah,
and I'm sure it's all bound up with that. Having just sat there and thinking, well, I don't know what there is. I don't know what I'm seeing. Now I'm thinking about it. I'm sure there are a number of reasons why this isn't a very desirable state of affairs, rather than just simply power. Although I'm sure that power has probably got quite a lot to do with it.
Yeah, I think if I understand it, I think the current situation, I think the Scottish FA have, even though they've heard the verbal reassurance from FIFA that everything's okay, I think they're sort of saying, well, we want that in writing if it's all the same with you. And yeah, I personally, I'm just wondering, you know, purely hypothetically, what the situation would be if, say, it was Scotland hosting the Olympics and England were on the kind of periphery, what their opinion of all this would be, whether they'd want to get involved, or as you say, because of the various things going on in individual countries, whether, you know, the English FA would sort of say, well, actually, our players have been pretty busy, they've been playing in a heavy Premier League schedule and Champions League, so, you know, we won't send any players. It could, you know, there's all kinds of things there.
Mind you, we've got all that to come, though, haven't we? We've got the horse trading and stuff like that to come for when the squad is actually selected.
Well, and then we've also got the issue of the three overage players.
Yeah, where they're going to come from.
You can just see Lord Beckham coming back for that one.
Oh, definitely, I'm sure, I'm pretty certain Lord Beckham will be banging on whoever's office door it is, probably Sebastian Coe.
So, yes.
Unless, of course, Ferguson's going to be the manager.
In which case, Lord Beckham doesn't have a chance.
He can forget it.
Unless Lord Beckham's got one of them lordships, you know, for Sir Alex, in which case then Lord Beckham. But I mean, of course, that's the other issue. Of course, is it likely that the Great British National Team will be managed by a Scotsman?
Well, that might be a way of sort of appeasing, Britishing it up a bit,
Britishing the whole thing up a bit.
Blimey. I expect to see that term catch on heavily in the next year.
Maybe get that Miss Wales lady, that very charming Ooh. Miss Wales lady who sung the national anthems to come and sing the national anthems yes. there as well.
She can play in whatever position she likes.
Extra Welsh. Easy now. Steady.
Well, I mean, just to wrap up then, since we're running out of time, and you mentioned earlier on that last time England won the competition, the UEFA Under-21 tournament was 1984, and you say that, you know, they won that without their best players. Might I remind you that there were such greats in that side as Mark Hatley and Brian Steen, Paul Walsh, Gary Bailey in goal, and Mel Stirland. Yes, I think we're out of time now.
Yes, you can remind me.
So reminded.
And they happen to be the only names I've got written down here. So, yes.
Well, interesting, the last time a great British side played, it had Stanley Matthews and Danny Blanchflower in it.
Mm. Wow. What was that in
it? That was 1955. It was an exhibition match against the Republic of Ireland, I think it was.
Really?
Yes.
Limus.
Played at Windsor Park.
At Windsor Park, no less. Good heavens. I bet that was riddled with all kinds of unpleasantness.
I'm sure it was.
That was a really awful game to go to. Crikey. Windsor Park. Great Britain. Oh, my God. versus the Free State, you say. Yeah, good grief.
Yeah, I'm sure we had a couple of armoured cars on.
I was just going to say. Has anyone thought of segregation? Yeah. Oh, yeah. There we are. Anyway, I think that's pretty much us out of time for this week. I hope you've enjoyed listening to what we had to say. And, of course, we encourage you, as ever, to contribute to the debate. Go to all our usual offices on Facebook, Twitter, and so on and so forth. If you're lucky, you'll get all the details later on. Failing that, perhaps you'll join us again for another Sound of Football podcast next week for Show 74. So, for now, I'd say thank you very much indeed, and hope to have the pleasure of your company next week. But goodbye from myself, from Terry, and from Graham. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
You can contact The Sound of Football by leaving a comment on our website at footballfairground.com/soundoffootball. Alternatively, we're on Facebook, facebook.com/soundoffootball, or follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/soundoffootball.